listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.
Standing with me, Paul Stevenson, you're live here on the Republic Broadcasting Network with me through till 10 p.m. That's 9 p.m. through till 10 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. through 11 Eastern Time, and 3 a.m. till 4 a.m. BST over in London, where I am. So welcome, everyone, to the show. I'm really looking forward to it. I've got joining me tonight radio host of the National Bugle Radio, Patrick Slattery. And many, if not all of you, will be familiar with Patrick, a host here for a significant period of time on RBN. I've listened to him for years. We've had some good chats in the past. I've been on his show, and I thought, let's have him on my show. Patrick, are you with me?
Yes, thank you very much. 3 to 4 a.m. your time, we could have recorded this.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I probably will do some pre-records. But one of the reasons I thought I could do this show, even though it's at 3 a.m. my time, is because I don't have any actual sort of work commitments on a Monday. I do try to sort of, you know, take Monday off for a mixture of sort of leisure and and preparing, you know, just my mind and stuff with all the type of stuff we do in the radio, because I have my show with Richard on Monday, so I normally don't work Monday. So, and if I'm off like that, I'm naturally quite nocturnal anyway. Okay. You know, if I'm left to my own devices, it's not uncommon for me to be up at this time. It's just if I have to be, you know, working somewhere at 8 a.m, that sort of shifts me, you know, into a sort of a sleep pattern that isn't actually natural to me, you know.
Yeah.
It's fine. I've listened to your show, Patrick. It seems that you know, since I've been learning and watching and listening to content, it seems that you've kind of always sort of been there in my journey. You know, I've listened to your show, and you popped up here and there. Do you want to just I'm just interested myself, but obviously for our listeners, how did you get into all this stuff?
Well, okay, so 10 or 11 years ago, President Obama, he appointed Elena Kagan to the Supreme Court. Was it 2011, something like that? And I was watching Democracy Now, which is a left wing, but it had been an anti-war news show during the early days of the Iraq War, and I was still watching it, although it was starting to really annoy me. And they were discussing Elena Kagan. Now, Elena Kagan was being criticized. She was at the time I guess she had been the head of the Harvard Law School, and then she had gone to work for the Obama administration as a solicitor general or something like that. And she was being criticized by some law professors of color from various places, Hispanics and blacks, and they were complaining that she had what was it, like 29 out of the 30 people that she appointed to Harvard Law School, that she hired for Harvard Law School while she was the dean of Harvard Law School, that they were white, white. And I was watching that, and Amy Goodman's Jewish, and she had on one of the professors from Harvard Law School, Lawrence Lessig, who later had a kind of like a, I don't know what you call it, a memetic run for the presidency in 2016 against Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primaries. I don't know what he was doing there, but he was there defending his friend and former boss Elena Kagan, and then Glenn Greenwald, who's Jewish. Lessig, is that his name? Lawrence Lessig. He's not Jewish, but Glenn Greenwald, of course, is Jewish and gay. But he's a lot of people's favorite gay Jew. And he was there criticizing Elena Kagan for a lot of things, for a lot of valid reasons. But nobody was bringing out the fact that these Hawaiites that were being appointed by Elena Kagan were probably a bunch of Jews. And so I did the research, and, you know, this is 2010, and I think 2010 it was hard to find out through Wikipedia whether people were Jewish or not, because for a while that was being repressed on Wikipedia. But I was able to track down that a majority of the people, these whites, were Jewish, right? And so actually non-Jewish whites, white Christians, were being underrepresented at Harvard Law School, but as usual were being blamed. So as usual, Jews were being favored. They were getting all this favoritism. There was all this Jewish supremacy going on, Jewish privilege, and it was being called white privilege and white supremacy. And so I did the research. I wrote it up as basically an academic article. I originally tried to send it to David Duke, but I didn't get through to him. So I sent it to Kevin McDonald in 2012. I'd sat on it for a while because I couldn't find an outlet for it, but Kevin McDonald, he said, wow, this is dynamite, and he posted it on his site, Occidental Observer, and either he told David Duke about it, or maybe David Duke stumbled across it when he was reading. I actually was never straight on that, but then David Duke contacted me, asked me on his show in 9 years ago, September 2012, and he really liked me, and so that's how I got into all this.
All right. Well, that's pretty cool. Cool backstory. Because it's pretty organic, isn't it? You know, there's no. I think you tend to find that with, when you compare that kind of story to what mainstream media is like. You know, I listen. Mm. You know, you're looking at. You know, it's not even because they go through the university, so it's credentialism. It's like, have you got the credentials, rather than have you got any talent or personality or charisma or charm or anything. You know, so you get these sort of journalists that are, you know, hangovers from when it was actually worth something to go through one of the, you know, indoctrination centers, you know, to get a degree and then come out and to do journalism, because they're so controlled whether they like it or not, because they've got, you know, they've got a certain status to protect of being, you know, a journalist, when really journalism and research ought to be organic, like what you just explained, you know. And of course that is something that's so common as well, that, you know, you have Jews. I like to sort of talk about them. So, you know, I work in gardening. Sometimes you have to look at a garden when you're weeding, because sometimes there's weeds that look like flowers, but you learn over a period of time when you're working in gardens to spot them, you know, and sometimes they're right there hiding in plain sight, and because you're looking for the small ones sometimes, and there's maybe one that's 6 feet tall. You're like, how did I miss that? You know, and like weeds, one of the ways to test if something's a weed or not is usually when you pull on a weed, it doesn't have much roots.
Yeah.
It doesn't really belong there. It's an imposter. So if you tug on it, you know, it'll come up pretty easily, you know. And yeah, there's lots of these sort of these, and the Ashkenazi Jews, of course, that's, you know, they're the ones who are running the show with and causing most of the problems. And it just so happens, sadly, that they often look like white Europeans, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great deal of genetic overlap. If you get good at it, you can get Jew-dar, where you're looking at facial characteristics And but even then, you know, facial characteristics alone, what is that, maybe 75% accuracy or 80% accuracy? You're not going to get to 100% accuracy. And of course, even, you know, because some people are half Jewish, some people are quarter Jewish, you know, what does it even mean? But you know, honestly, if people had good Judar and they could use the facial characteristics, they could use the name, they could use the backstory, you know, somebody's from Brooklyn or somebody went to such and such school or, you know, somebody just has certain attitudes or they're in certain professions, you can get the Judar accuracy up well over 90%. You know, and if people had that Judar, you could, and you looked at TV and you saw all these Jews telling you things, telling you how evil fellow whites can be, and you had the Judar, we wouldn't have these problems, because people would just, you know, they'd see that Jew up on TV saying how bad whites are, or see the, or telling how you know, COVID's an existential threat to us or whatever it is, and you say, oh, that's just a Jew, let's change the channel.
And sometimes, of course, they very easily give themselves away. If you're assuming that you're listening to a white guy or a white girl, and then you hear that, you know, something will pretty early will tweak your interest, when, because usually it will be anti-white. And just a good example is, I mean, I like to watch the NFL, as I think I mentioned to you, and there's a guy called Max Kellerman. And Max just cannot help himself, you know, he just can't hide his hatred of whites, really, you know, even when he does try and hide it, he's just got a bias against, you know, white players more often than not, you know, not all the time, but it is definitely there. I mean, he really hates a guy called Carson Wentz, who's white and a Christian as well, so I mean, you know, that's just the worst combination for someone like Max Kellerman. But it is also amazing as well, just how many of them pop up and you're like, oh, okay, there's another one. But they're always in, you know, powerful positions. Everywhere of power and influence there, you'll find them. And of course, apart from the ones that we know of, they'll often be at, you know, CEO level, or in the media, they'll be at editor or sub-editor level, influencing the narrative. And we might never sort of see some of these people, and they'll have white faces out presenting their news and their stories, so that it looks like, for all intents and purposes, it's white when it's not, you know?
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if it's just like here and there, if you're the normie and here and there, you know, you were to learn that, you know, the Secretary of State's Jewish, or this person's Jewish, or that judge is Jewish, it doesn't mean anything. You really need the totality of it, or at least you need a critical mass of the totality. And, you know, at some point you say, wait a minute, okay, they're 2% of the population, and they are so prevalent in this field and that field. And it's not just that these people just happen to be Jewish, but they also tend to have, you know, certain attitudes. They have certain agendas. And once you can see the totality of it, then, wow, it's very enlightening. But how many people are there? And, you know, you look at the what I call the corona apocalypse going on all over the world. And you know that a lot of national leaders in these various countries, they're not all in on it. A lot of them are just, they're fooled, because they don't have this totality of seeing what's going on. Yeah. I don't think you can understand the world without and what's going on in the world without understanding the Jewish role in it.
Oh no, I don't think anything makes sense unless you understand that there is an agenda, that there's strings being pulled, and you know, they take an example of this was recently, and I just felt really sort of just grieved by it the other day. Not only because of, you know, the immigration problem, you know, that I'm going to outline here, but just that they end up, because of their agenda, they end up bringing sort of like they make people and even nations behave in shameful ways. You know, they take people and nations and governments to places which are actually embarrassing even for them, I think. And a good example of this is at the weekend or a couple of days ago, you know, we've been talking and, you know, Priti Patel's been talking about being tough on all these boats coming across the channel. And all she does is talk, but there's been so much outrage about it and so much pressure about it that she's been, you know, under increasing pressure. So the latest thing is that they're going to,
and who's this pressure?
Well, just, I mean, you know, even the likes of Farage and stuff like that's been going down there and doing videos and stuff like that. And, you know, you've had, you know, Mark Collins went down there and stuff as well, and they projected onto the, you know, the Patriotic Alternative projected down the coast about White Lives Matter and stuff.
And there's been skirmishes. The White Cliffs of Dover, right? Which is, talk about an awesome event. What would you call it? I mean, projecting it in giant letters on the White Cliffs of Dover. How iconic in that. Yeah,
that is pretty cool. You got to hand it to him. And so anyway, there's been this, you know, and this is, you see, if they could keep this secret, they, you know, they would. I mean, there's been 16,000 migrants have come across that channel this year alone, Patrick. 16,000. I mean, that's a village. And if they could keep that quiet, they would. But of course, today with social media, people are down there with cameras, and you know it's getting more exposed, and they're not able to hide this, and people see them coming off and going on to, you know, poachers, and then they get housed and fed in hotels at the expense of the taxpayer who doesn't want it. So it's a real, you know, kick in the teeth for people in this country who have got very, very little appetite for it. So anyway, the latest thing is that they're like, okay, we're going to get tough on it. We're going to take those boats and turn them around and just take them back. So apparently, according to the French border forces, who the British taxpayer has paid a fortune to stop these boats coming across, but they keep coming across anyway, and the French border force have been little more than a taxi service, taking them out and then letting them go just as soon as they get into British waters. And then what happens is you have a bunch of goody-two-shoes, including our you know, rescue services and things like that, which are actually, again, you know, supposed to be for people in genuine, you know, accidents or people who are get stranded at sea or something. And they've just become, you know, a taxi service. So at the weekend or a few days ago, there was an attempt. The French border force apparently tried to get a group of these people in a dinghy onto their boat to take them back to France. And what did they do? Well, all these so-called refugees, they just jumped in the water. Because they knew if they jumped in the water, eventually they'd have to be rescued, they'd be seen as victims, and it would be cold-hearted if you didn't. So there's another idea. And because of all these international laws about refugees, you know, your hands are tied. And once they get here, and of course they were picked up, and once they get here, pretty much none of them really ever get sent back. You know, the whole legal process is so long, they just challenge it. Once they're here, they know that they can keep challenging and keep challenging it probably for a lifetime with all these human rights laws and international refugee laws and all that sort of stuff, you know. But I just thought to myself, here we are, you know, in this situation, which is just shameful. Well, you're in this situation where these people know they can just, it's farcical is what I'm saying. You know, it's kind of shameful, the whole thing where that this is where they bring you to. We've got this problem, and you get these people jumping into the water, and there's no, you know, it's just a mess, in other words, you know?
It's a mess, and it's going on everywhere. And there, in the United States right now, between Mexico and Texas, there's a bridge, and there's just, I guess it's well over 10,000 people at this point who are under the bridge. And there was a very interesting video that was released. Was it a helicopter video, or maybe it was a drone video where you're hearing the people describe what's going on? But there's just this mass of people who are coming over, and they're Haitians. They're not Mexican. They're supposedly Haitian. Maybe a lot are African. Guess we'll have to talk about it on the other side.
Yeah, we're going to break, folks.
Did someone It's bigger than me. It's screaming out.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
We back.
Okay, we're okay. Yeah, were we going to play that tune?
Shall we?
Okay. All right. Okay, we're back, folks. I'm live here with Patrick Slattery from the National Bugle Radio. So, yeah, go ahead, Patrick. Where were we?
Well, we were talking about this bridge over the Rio Grande. That you can walk across the Rio Grande in that area of Texas, at least this season. There's not a lot of water. But I guess on the American side of the bridge, there are just thousands and thousands of people camping out under the bridge waiting to be processed. And they're supposedly from Haiti. They're blacks. But, you know, for all we know, a lot of them are from Africa or elsewhere. There has been this flood of people into South America, into I guess they go to Colombia, and from Colombia into Panama and eventually get onto the Inter-American Highway. Is that what it's called? And there was a lot of coverage of this last spring. I remember there's a young woman from Okinawa, Japan, and she went down there and she was traveling with, there's a war journalist who I'm not really a big fan of, but what's his name? He's got a name. It sounds kind of like a Chinese name, but he's not Chinese. He's an American. His nickname's Bam Bam. Oh, what's his name? It slipped my mind. But at any rate, they'd gone down and they were interviewing all these people in Colombia, waiting to. There's a real hard part of the trek going through a swamp in Panama, but they were there and they were attracted in Latin America apparently. I mean, they were broadcast, and this was a few months ago. They played some clips from CNN, and CNN was just saying, "Yeah, come to America, come to America. You'll be welcome. You'll get a lot of free stuff." And in Spanish, it was the Spanish broadcast, and they've just been encouraging people. They were encouraging people to come. This is shortly after the fake Biden administration started, and. It's a long trip. It's very long trip. Well, they're arriving and they're just flooding in, something like 7,000 a day. And if you do 7,000 a day over the course of say 250 days, that's like 1.75 million right there. Right. So,
that's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. And the administration is saying that encounters with illegal aliens are down, but on this video that is circulating now, the commentators are saying, yeah, of course encounters is down because they pulled the agents away from where they would be encountering illegal aliens. They pulled them back from field positions into processing positions. So they're letting the people come, they're in the country, and then they're just being processed and sent on their way to wherever in America, and it's going on. And the images are just as dramatic, looks just as much of an invasion, because they had this drone or helicopter going over the Rio Grande, and you're just seeing lines and lines of people walking across, wading across the river into the United States, and it's just as dramatic as what was going on with people, trampling across wheat fields in Eastern Europe a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is criminal, and it should be criminal. And even the likes of a broadcaster like CNN, should be accountable. But it just goes back to that whole network we're talking about. When you put all the pieces together, I mean, it's kind of, as you say, it's almost pointless pointing out this person's a Jew, that person's a Jew. But when you point out the bigger picture and the narrative, it all makes sense. Demographics is, well, it is one of the ways that they are subverting the West. And of course, it's a massive, massive issue, demographics, because demographics matter. And, there's so few people. Well, I shouldn't say there's so few people, but it amazes me how anybody could be, non-Jewish could be on board with it. But I guess they've got their media for that, and the universities, which they've infiltrated with far left and pro-immigration narratives as well to bring about this stuff, because this whole multiculturalism thing is basically an invasion under a different name. And that's why it's such a dangerous thing, because people don't recognize it for what it is. They're not able to sort of, look at the implications of this. Well, I mean, obviously people like us are, but there's so many people who aren't, or else they just shrug their shoulders at it. It's tragic, really, what's happening and how they keep managing to just continue. It doesn't matter whether it's over there or whether it's over here. It's just the traffic's always just one way, people coming into the Western nations,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're taking advantage of our empathy. And, white people, compared to other groups, tend to be more empathetic, and they're taking advantage of
and
that.
I'm nurturing.
Mm-hmm. I hear the music.
Yeah.
I want the truth. You can't have. handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Hi, you're back here with me, Paul Stevenson, on Last Man Standing. And I'm with Patrick Slattery from the National Bugle Radio. Patrick, where did you get the little jingle that you use at the, it's quite iconic, the little jingle at the start of your show? Where did you get that and come up with the name National Bugle Radio?
So that is the Bonfrey Polka. And it is written by, I think, Edward Strauss, you know, one of the Strausses. And that had been the theme song to my favorite radio guy when I was a kid. There was Gene Shepherd, and he had a show that came out of WOR in New York. And I would listen to it nightly. It was syndicated. And he used that, and he told stories. He didn't have he never had guests, but he would just tell stories, and sometimes he'd play a record or two, And it was just a lot of fun. So that's where I got it from, Gene Shepard.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because it's kind of ironic in a way, because, you know, it's quite a lighthearted, cheery kind of a little jingle when you consider the gravity of the topics that are discussed on your show. You know, I mean, you don't shy away from the serious stuff. But so there is an irony to that, but there maybe a little bit of an irony in the way you present as well, I think, which probably people find, because you've got quite a dry sense of humor, haven't you? And then you sort of everything's sort of interwoven. I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. So I mean, there's the word sense of humor, and that is having a sense about what is funny, which isn't the same thing as being funny yourself. But to sense what is funny, and I do have that. I actually grew up as a straight man. My sister was funny. I wasn't. My dad was funny. I wasn't. But I learned how to be a straight man and appreciate other people who were funny. And so that's, I try to bring some of that, because, you know, this is so depressing. What's going on could be very, very depressing. But if you can find some fun or some humor, it can, and enough to suppress the feelings of depression, then if people aren't feeling depressed, they can actually do something about it. But if you just get, because that's the thing, you learn about what's going on, and it's depressing. But if you learn about what's going on and you're not depressed, maybe then it's motivating. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a thin line, that, because, you know, you're right, it is depressing. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I think myself, you know, because it does get to me, you know, personally, and, you know, it affects my mood sometimes. And, you know, I think it's just, you know, it's all consuming at times. And yet, you know, it's not just going to go away by pretending it's not the case. But, you know, sometimes you have that little voice in your head saying, you know, it's just, why get involved? Just, you know, go away and do something else. And, you know, just, because so many people do take that attitude. Well, you know, what can I do and everything else? But you keep coming back to it, you know, because there's so much of it is an injustice, and it's so irritating, and it's so dark and hostile. And even at times when you try and take a break from it, you can't. There's never, you know, even whenever I watch watch a bit of NFL or something, the messaging's always there in the ads, you know. It's obsessed with this climate change thing and all the ads. I mean, they just are relentless. So it's always getting your attention, you know. So you actually have to just not be aware of anything, because there is no escaping it, you know.
Yeah, that there's no escaping it, and it's billboards, it's advertisements, TV ads, even, you know, professional training, even like this time of year in the United States, it's Medicare season, and if you're an older person, you get inundated with direct mail, and you just look down, and gratuitously they're changing the backstory, and they show, because, you know, they've been promoting black men as the ideal mates for white women for such a long time, right? Well, not for such a long, but for a while now, it's been really up in our face, but it's you know, it's aimed, it's the young people who are getting together. Now, in the older generation, there was very little of it. But if you look at these ads for Medicare, you wouldn't know it. They keep showing elderly white women with elderly black men, and it didn't happen. There aren't those couples out there, but
no.
But they're kind of shoehorning it into, and so it's just everywhere. It's ubiquitous, and it's hard to get away from. And, you know, I'm sure it has a psychological toll. If it didn't have a psychological toll, they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. Well, even the American football, you know, and here's the thing, I suppose people like us, you know, they disingenuously present us as, I don't know, people who hate black people or hate people of different color or something. I actually don't. There are black people that I admire in politics. In you know churches that I've been to, even when I, you know, watch some of the American football guys, you know, they seem to be, a lot of them are hardworking guys and are quite cool, they're good athletes, or they're good to watch and stuff like that. But it's like, look at the NFL or look at even the English national team, you know, over the evolution over the last 20, say 30 years. It's like sometimes when you hear, you know, whenever the players, they at the start, they give out their names and what college they went to. I mean, you can literally, it's not uncommon for one of the American football teams where you've got like one white guy, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
just yeah. one on the team. You know, I'm watching, you know, I was watching earlier. It's just every game's the same. I mean, it's, there are less and less white people. And so I guess people misunderstand, you know, they would think, oh, what's the problem with that? Well, it's because, you know, it's, these are white countries and we're supposed to have somewhere to call home as well. And it's completely foolish. It's an injustice, but you're just supposed to just, you see, you know, you're not allowed to like it, Patrick. And if you have a problem with it, then you've got a target in your back. And that, of course, is the other depressing thing about it as well, because this is, you know, it's no joke. This is dangerous. They've got so much influence in the judiciary system. And with the police are very politicized as well. And just for talking about some of the things that we've spoken about tonight and having some of the views we've had tonight can seriously end you up in trouble. And how do you escape that, you know? You start getting a map out and thinking, where could I go so I could protect my son, you know?
Indeed. Well, you know, I want to get back just a bit to the invasions coming across the borders. And,
yeah.
you know, we have, I think this is something where men and women are different. And I'm not the type of person who goes around saying that women shouldn't have the vote or this or that. But I do think that if you look at what's going on with the immigration, that in particular, I mean, the immigration, the people who are behind the immigration are Jews. It's not that they're women, they're Jews. But I think a lot of it's aimed at women. And I think women lack the innate, maybe you could call it xenophobia if you want, but they lack the innate alarm at invasion. Because what happens if a country gets invaded and conquered? Well, the men get slaughtered. The women get taken as prizes, which means that the men don't reproduce. They get slaughtered. Sometimes they're put into slavery, but typically castrated if they are. The women reproduce. And so I do think there is kind of an evolutionary basis to this, a genetic basis, where men who don't have an aversion to massive immigration, to invasion into their country, if they don't have an aversion to it, I mean, they have an aversion to it because the ones who didn't have an aversion to it were bred out of, you know, they failed to reproduce. Whereas women, there isn't that tendency. And you do, you know, this has been pointed out a lot. Women are much more welcoming and much more understanding of these, the what we could call invaders. Because the thing is, if they're going to reproduce one way or another, it doesn't really matter whether they're reproducing with their own people or reproducing with the invader. The invasion,
I mean, yeah.
doesn't alter their reproductive success.
Yeah, and despite the, you know, the self-reliant independence of the modern day feminist, which I believe is massively, you know, over-amplified as a reality, the fact is that women have an instinct to be taken care of themselves and to breed and to have their children taken care of, and they'll be much less likely to worry about whether that's a white man who lives two doors down or whether that's some guy who's just got off the boat from, I don't know, Eritrea. Now, it's not very sensible when you look at the reality of it, when a lot of these white women get with black men, because, and I take no pleasure in saying it, but, you know, black men don't stay with their women very well. I mean, you could, just one example, Evander Holyfield, the boxer, one of the reasons he's broke is he's something like, I think he's got like 14 children to 14 different women, so that they all got a slice of his wealth when he was worth something like $500 million or something, and he's broke now. But you know, a lot of the I worked in advertising for years. I still do a little bit, and when we were studying some advertising, some of the bigger companies we went to and we learned about advertising, 90 or 95% of advertising is aimed at women, because they don't really have that filter. And you could look at it as an evolutionary thing as well, but I don't even think you need, you know, it requires you to look at it that way, because you could equally look at it if there's a creator who created men in a certain way and women in a certain way, which is why, you know, biblical Christians affirm that the man should be head of the household, and therefore there's a limit put on what women can do. And I actually do personally think, you know, that history has proven in the last century that women, you know, having the ability to vote and being, you know, pushed out into the political arena has been a total wrecking ball. Some of that is because they're corrupt, but some of that is because just what we're talking about. They're very easily exploited and manipulated because of their emotional nature. So they don't see the dominoes fall, and they just see some black people, you know, jumping out of a boat, and they're desperate, you know. And this term that, you know, gets churned out all the time, their perilous journeys. You know, you hear this, perilous journeys. Well, perilous journeys from where? From their own countries, which have got nothing to do with us. And, you know, more often than not, there isn't that many wars going on, Patrick, for all these refugees to be fleeing. Yes, there has been wars, but you can be guaranteed that it's almost entirely and almost exclusively a European or, you know, white nation response that's required. Even when we don't bring them in here, we end up paying Turkey or somebody to, you know, millions so that they can take them. It's still the burdens with us all the time. And they could quite easily go to places which are closer geographically, ethnically, racially, and culturally, but they don't. I mean, and also, you know, Israel never takes anybody. And no one, there's a complete silence around that. You know, they're over there in the Middle East. And if you said to some, even the likes of Farage and these kind of centrists or people who would call themselves right wing or whatever, if you said, why doesn't Israel take some of these people? They'd probably say, oh, well, there's a lot of hostility by those Muslims over there. You know, Israel are protecting themselves. Oh, but it's okay to let them come here, you know? It's okay for our children to get blown up at a nightclub, but it's not okay for the Israelis, you know? So, but it's always our countries that have to deal with the problem. Almost entirely exclusively, it's a European response. And this very rarely gets spoken about, you know? The Chinese don't take anybody. I mean, they're very hostile to Muslims over there. Israelis don't take anybody. The Japanese don't either. And that's just normal. They're just looking after their
Japanese, you know? They unfortunately have been allowing a lot more people in than they used to. It's not anywhere near European proportions, but there's been a lot of pressure on them, and to take refugees. They're not taking big numbers of refugees, but they are taking some. And a lot of American or international corporations, like LexisNexis, like weird corporations that why would they even care? But they get involved in the legal defense of refugees in Japan. Japan's very vulnerable right now because it's got such an aging population. So that's a worry. But, you know, how about a country like India? You know, India's got a booming economy and it's got a lot of land. Is it bringing in lots of Africans into India? Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, the Indians are very racist. If they're honest, they'll tell you that. But of course, they're not honest because they don't want to tell you that. It's much easier to sit back and it suits their interest if they're in the UK to run with the narrative that white people are racist, which of course is the only narrative. You know, when you have a discussion about racism, you're not actually talking about racism. You're talking about, you know, cultural Marxism in Western nations is what you're talking about. You're not talking about racism.
Since when did racism become the worst thing in the whole world? Is it like...
We've discussed that as well.
You don't hear people complaining about cannibalism or even modern slavery. It's only a problem when it was, you know, in the white countries. Most people aren't even aware that slavery was endemic throughout the world, throughout history.
No, I know they're not. But you're right. I mean, I think we did a show on that, didn't we? Just like, talking about that. I mean, it is, in reality, is racism really the biggest problem you're facing? I mean, you know, even if you frame it in the way that it's framed in our lands, you know, what is racism? You know, is it hostility? I mean, is it a feeling of being superior? Well, even if it is a feeling of being superior, as long as it doesn't result in any harm to anybody, and this is how you know there's hypocrisy with this, because this type of aggression and actual aggression and hostility has been witnessed with football teams over the years, where there's actually violence, you know, between a, you know, and you saw it in Europe where there were some English teams banned, you know, the English they got quite rowdy and there was actual violence, so they were banned from European football for a while. But we'll catch it on the other side.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Come take your best shot.
All right, you're back here with me, Paul Stevenson, on Last Man Standing. This is, well, it's over here in the UK. It's the early hours of Monday, the 20th of September, over there where you guys are in the United States, where most of the listeners are. It's the 19th, almost 10 p.m. Central Time. Okay, Patrick, the hour has gone very quickly, but we were just talking about, the whole racism narrative, it's been almost created, as a problem. Largely, I think it has, because you've seen a complete lack of what you would, how they actually describe racism in terms of this hostility. You don't see it from white people very often anyway, but they frame it in that way so that people are terrified of it, so that if you actually express that you don't like mass immigration and your country being plundered, then they can call you a racist, and that basically handcuffs a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're called you're a rapist. I thought you were a racist. Oh, okay, never mind then. So, you got people like Roman Polanski, right, who was arrested with for raping drugging and raping a 13-year-old girl. And but he's a cause célèbre in Hollywood among the Jews. It's like, oh, no, he's not a racist. He's a rapist. He's okay. What was the guy's something Frank, the pencil factory owner in Georgia in the 19-teens, who raped and murdered an Irish girl, and the ADL was formed in order to defend him, because they're just rapists. That's okay, not racist.
Exactly,
that's the worst thing you can be. Racism is just saying something kind of dismissive about a white person saying something dismissive about another race, even if it's true.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, you can't say, you see, there's an issue. If I was to say, there are black people that I admire, I've got some friends or whatever, and then you say, but experience everywhere has shown that a rising black population is a surefire recipe for a rise in violent and sexual crime and other social disorders and the implications and the costs of that, then you're a racist. You see, the two things, you're not allowed to say those two things together, because that's deemed to be not permitted. So then you have a target on your back for stating a fact. But if you were a football team and you have tribalism, and you have genuine hostility and say all sorts of things about Liverpool Football Club or Bayern Munich Football Club and say that you're better or whatever else, then that's allowed, even if it does involve violence and genuine hatred,
Mm-hmm. Well, Arsenal is just trash.
Arsenal are trash. They're rubbish. And, Arsenal have they get mocked. If you ever meet anybody who are Arsenal fans, they get mocked for being little whingers, like little boys, because they're Arsenal fans. They're always whinging. I can't believe we're out of time, but listen, Patrick, thank you very much for joining me, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks.
All right, folks, I'll be back again next Sunday, same time, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. BST. So until then, take care and God bless.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations